Okay, here we go. Welcome to episode 1 of Representation. I'm your host, Daniel Kwan. Now, you might know me from one of these facets of my identity, my life, my career trajectory, my personal trajectory. Now, I'm a retired archaeologist, a proud doctoral dropout, an EDU professional, a game designer, and a podcast host. And this is my first solo podcast. I started podcasting with a series called Curiosity in Focus. We made an incredible number of episodes. I transitioned into another show called Asians Represent, which talked about, you know, Asian representation in tabletop gaming and sort of that analog space. And now I'm trying something new. And this is scary for me. I've kind of spent the last couple of days trying to decide whether or not I want to actually follow through with this. And, you know, I decided that I need to do this because this is my general outlook on life. We're all ultimately going to die. I'm not going to end with that morbid statement. We're all going to die. But whether you believe in an afterlife, some sort of ether, or just this like dark void, our time on planet Earth is limited. So while you're here, what are you going to do? So there's Muhammad Ali has this quote, and he said, he who is not courageous enough to take risks will accomplish nothing in life. And one of the most dangerous things you can do in life, you know, by this quote, is play it safe. You know, ideas are something you either act on or set free. And fear is looking back and wishing that I had done this thing, this podcast. So here I am doing something new, doing something that scares me. And this is Represent Asian, a podcast that is going to chronicle my journey to learning more about my community and the broader Asian experience in media. Each episode will also be set against the backdrop of, you know, a broader history of Asians in North America and beyond. So let's get into it. Now, I'm based in Toronto, Canada, and something huge just happened. And I've kind of taken some time to reflect on this, but something amazing happened. The Toronto Raptors won the NBA Finals, and Jeremy Lin made history by playing for 1 minute in Game 3 of the NBA Finals series against the Golden State Warriors, and in doing so, he became the first East Asian to play in the NBA Finals and is also the first to win in my hometown. And that's incredible. And this was a giant deal for us here in Toronto. There was this massive parade. Everybody was praising like Kawhi Leonard because that guy is, you know, a god of basketball. But Jeremy Lin, at least from my perspective, was at that focal point of that 5.5 hour victory parade that they had in the city. That parade that 3 million people came out to. That was huge for the, not only for Toronto, but for the Asian community in general. And I waited a little bit to record this episode because something else happened in the world of basketball. Rui Hachimura signed to the Washington Wizards. And Rui Hachimura was actually the first Japanese player to ever be drafted into the NBA in the first round. He was 9th overall. This is also huge because, A, that's another jersey that I have to buy to support, you know, another Asian in mainstream sports. But B, we're starting to see these huge changes in mainstream media. We see Jeremy Lin, who's an NBA champ. We see Rui Hachimura, who's the first, you know, Japanese player ever to be drafted into the NBA in the first round, because there was another guy. His name was Yatsuka Okuyama, and he was the first Japanese player ever drafted onto an NBA team, which was on the Golden State Warriors, coincidentally, because, you know, we just talked about Jeremy Lin in the 1981 draft, and he was the 10th pick in the 8th round. But this is huge because there's all this spotlight on these Asian athletes, but also Asians in film, and that's what this episode is about. I was just super excited about Jeremy Lin's win. I have a Jeremy Lin jersey. I'm going to have to get a Rui Hachimura jersey, but we've got something amazing going on for the broader Asian community, and for this episode, I wanted to talk about Always Be My Maybe. You know, for a really long time, the Asian community was celebrating like one major motion picture or one major, you know, TV appearance. At first, it was like, oh my God, Glenn and The Walking Dead. It's an Asian guy. Oh my God. And his partner on the show is white woman. This is huge, right? Or, you know, at the time, we were like, whoa, Crazy Rich Asians. We have this, like, giant, mega Hollywood blockbuster that's A, not only doing well, but B, showing, you know, a side of Asians that we don't see. Or, you know, Fresh Off the Boat becomes this giant hit on TV and has been going on for I don't know how many seasons. Or you go to Netflix and you see Ali Wong and all of her comedy specials, which are amazing and have kind of, you know, permeated into this sort of North American Asian jargon. Like, I don't know how many times I've spoken to somebody and the word, like, the words fancy Asian or jungle Asian has come up. And that's all because of Ali Wong, who coincidentally was also a writer on the first three seasons of Fresh Off the Boat. But now there's Always Be My Maybe. And Always Be My Maybe was a huge movie for me personally because it kind of broke a lot of molds. If you haven't seen it, it's a Netflix film. It was written by Ali Wong and Randall Park, and it's about two people who live very different lives. Ali Wong plays Sasha Tran, and Randall Park plays Marcus Kim. And they were neighbors and childhood friends who grew up together in San Francisco. As teenagers, they had this, like, they had this kind of budding romance, and they had sex in the back of, you know, Marcus's car, and then went their separate ways after graduation, and then they're reunited. So 15 years later, Sasha is a celebrity chef. She's huge in Los Angeles, and she returns to San Francisco in order to open a new restaurant. She and Marcus have kind of this really, really uncomfortable reunion where he is working for his father as an AC repairman, and they reunite and reconnect, and Sasha realizes that Marcus hasn't really moved on with his life. He hasn't, you know, followed his dreams like she did. He hasn't, you know, he's underachieving. And the movie kind of centers around their relationship from childhood to adulthood. Sasha undergoes, you know, several heartbreaks, and so does Marcus. And the movie is about their relationship. Now, this isn't just your standard, you know, Asian rom-com. It's not about super, super crazy rich people like Crazy Rich Asians. It's about characters that feel real. And it's not that, you know, Marcus is an AC repairman or that Sasha is a celebrity chef, because I don't know how all Asians could relate to a celebrity chef. It's the fact that food was the focal point of this movie. What was interesting was that everything about this movie, not just the fact that, you know, Ali Wong was a celebrity chef, but the fact that their childhood friendship for their characters, all the way to her career as a chef, are all based on home cooking. This steaming pot of kimchi jjigae, and the relationship between Ali Wong's character, her parents, and Marcus's parents, and Marcus's mother, who teaches Sasha how to cook, and how this relationship, and that, you know, from the beginning of the movie all the way to this big reveal at the end, are all based around this dish, this very simple, beautiful Korean comfort food dish. And it actually reminds me of one of my favorite, like, cooking YouTubers, Mang Chi. If you don't know about her, she's this Korean woman, and she has this amazing YouTube channel. I'll put links to her recipe for kimchi jjigae in the description for this episode. But food is what made the relationship feel real. It was the core of this beautiful friendship. It was, you know, the reason why they got back together. It was the reason why they reconnected. And a lot of the scenes where they're talking to each other and, you know, reconnecting and learning about each other's lives in the 15 years that had passed since that night they had sex in the back of Marcus's car, you know, are all based on food. Kind of reminds me of that movie Chef, the Jon Favreau movie. It's incredible. But with something more important. So in addition to food, there's one other piece of Always Be My Maybe that, you know, makes it important and relatable. And it's not that Keanu Reeves is in there. I love the fact that Keanu Reeves is in there. He's just another one of those members of the Asian community who's really killing it. Like the fact that John Wick, there's three John Wick movies and there's a fourth John Wick movie coming out. blows my mind, and it's so awesome that this, you know, modern Hollywood action star also has Asian roots, and you know, he's not doing kung fu in every single movie. It's awesome, but this movie had just some incredible cameos, and Keanu Reeves being one of them. But that wasn't the second thing that made Always Be My Maybe relatable. It was the fact that there are Asian American characters who don't have the kinds of careers we're used to seeing Asians occupy on screen. That was it. You know, if Asians are cast in a film, it's usually as a punchline. So like Ken Jeong in The Hangover, as like a sidekick. So Short Round in Indiana Jones in The Temple of Doom, or Data in The Goonies, who, you know, now that I think of it, are, you know, both played by the same actor, Jonathan Kwan, or as a villain. If you've seen that really horrible movie, Jurassic Park Fallen Kingdom, B.D. Wong from the very first Jurassic Park movie plays the villain in the latest one. And he just plays this like scheming Asian scientist. And it's really cringy because it really draws on those ideas of yellow peril, that fear of Asians that we see historically. And I mean, to this day, right? Always Be My Maybe does something really cool. It doesn't stick to these stereotypes. We don't see the punchline, the sidekick, or the villain. What we see in the protagonists, what we see in the Asian actors, are what I'm going to call the success and the underachiever. Now, the success is played by Ali Wong. That's Sasha Tran in the movie. You know, unlike most successful Asians that you see in pop culture, you know, you usually see people who are successful in finance or, you know, science, technology, engineering, or math, like in Crazy Rich Asians, who are, it's all finances and inherited wealth. Sasha, the character Ali Wong plays in the movie, her success comes from her work in the creative industries as a chef in the culinary arts. That itself really undermines a lot of the stereotypes we see of Asian women in media. But the big one, and the one I think resonated most with me, is the underachiever, right? I'm a giant advocate for more Asian stories in Hollywood. But what I wasn't expecting was a trope that I didn't know I needed until in this movie. And it's the underachieving Asian. And now I want more. You know, prior to this, I'm reminded of Cal Penn's character in Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. But it's this underachieving Asian that really breaks boundaries and breaks barriers in Always Be My Maybe. You know, Randall Park's character, Marcus, he's an aspiring rapper, but he thinks that he has to stay at home and take care of his dad after his mom passed away. He has, you know, he's a member of this hip-hop group called Hello Peril, which is a play on Yellow Peril. And he's talented. He's talented, but so unmotivated. He stays at home, he just smokes weed, and, you know, dances alone in his room. It's comedic. There's nothing wrong with doing that. But it's just something we're not used to seeing Asians occupy in media, right? So both of these really undermine this notion of the model minority. More so Randall Park's character than Ali Wong's, but both undermine our perceptions of Asians. Now, if you've never heard of the term model minority, well, the title of this episode is called Remodel Minority. Model minority is this pervasive stereotypical expectation that's placed on Asian Americans or Asian Canadians or, you know, Asians living in America, where everyone is believed to be smart, wealthy, hardworking, and obedient and uncomplaining. Basically, this stereotype means that we're universally high achievers. Now, this term was first coined by William Peterson in a January 9th, 1966 edition of the New York Times Magazine in an essay entitled Success Story, Japanese American Style. Now, when I went to the Museum of Chinese in America in New York City with my girlfriend, I saw the cover of an August 31st, 1987 issue of Time Magazine. And on the cover, it said, "Those Asian American whiz kids." And it featured like six Asian kids wearing American clothes, but like one of them sitting in front of a computer, another is holding some books, and they all look like they're ready to just kill it in school, right? Now, this was really big, okay? Following, you know, the 1965 Immigration and Nationality Act, and so this is a year before the term model minority even made it into the zeitgeist, okay, there was the Immigration and Nationality Act. Now, this was in America. This was an attempt to kind of reverse the decades of systemic exclusion in the United States, and it gave priorities to family reunification efforts in order to bring people into America, bring Asians into America. Because prior to that, there were all of these really horrible exclusionary laws that prevented people from coming to North America. Okay, but here's the problem with this Immigration and Nationality Act. This is the preference that they placed on, you know, people who came in to be reunified with their families. The first order of priority and preference was placed on unmarried children under 21 years of age of U.S. citizens. The second was spouses and unmarried children of permanent residents. And the third, which is the problematic one as it relates to this idea of model minority that William Peterson coined a year later, was professionals, scientists, and artists of exceptional ability. Okay. Now, before 1965, we were enemy aliens, faceless railroad workers, violent hatchet-wielding street thugs, wait for a future episode on that one, and job-stealing immigrants. You know, after it, we were bankers, doctors, engineers, programmers, scientists. We were people of exceptional ability, and I say that with air quotes. Okay. So between this 1965, 1966, and 1987 time period, okay, there's this weird bias towards Asians who were very, very successful in the media and in government and what we saw being accepted into the countries of North America. Okay, now, 2 years before, you know, that Time magazine cover, that fateful cover that you could see on exhibit at the MoCA, okay, that's the Museum of Chinese in America, William R. Dorner wrote a July 8th, 1985 editorial in Time magazine. So same magazine as that 87 cover, okay? He wrote an editorial called Asians to America with Skills. A wave of arrivals from the Far East enriches the country's talent pool. And he wrote, this is verbatim, okay, let me find it. What really distinguishes the Asians is that of all the new immigrants, they are compiling an astonishing record of achievement. Asians are represented far beyond their population share at virtually every top-ranking university. Their contingent in Harvard's freshman class has risen from 3.6% to 10.9% since 1976. Partly as a result of their academic accomplishments, Asians are climbing the economic ladder with remarkable speed. Now, certainly there were people who resented this, but a lot of you are probably thinking, what's so bad about this stereotype that states that we're amazing, right? Things should be great for us. We're smart, we're rich, everything that the American dream should be. But turns out quite a bit, okay? The first thing about this model minority stereotype, this idea that we're just doing so well, is that it erases histories of oppression. It erases the ideas of, you know, the Chinese Exclusion Act. You know, this Immigration and Nationality Act is supposed to make up for, you know, laws that prevented us from even coming into the country. These sorts of laws are meant to, you know, make us forget and make the public forget the 100 laws in, you know, Kamloops, British Columbia that prevented Chinese people from having, you know, basic human rights at the start of the 20th century. I did a whole podcast on that for Curiosity and Focus when we talked about the First World War and Frederick Lee. Okay. It also does something that is extremely problematic, and it erases, you know, our diversity. It creates a singular identity for a diverse group of people. And not only does it do that, but in doing so, it masks the fact that Asian American Pacific Islander groups have high dropout and poverty rates in school. Here's the truth, right? Asian Americans are a diverse group of people with very diverse experiences. And the model minority stereotype assumes that we're all affluent. And this results in, you know, vulnerable and underserved communities who aren't perceived as in need. Okay? Like, what about the Chinese launderers, right? If all people, if all Asians who came into North America were highly successful and not too not in need of any help or anything like that. What about the people who worked in laundromats? So my maternal grandfather, my gonggong, came to Canada alone. He was 16 years old, and he came to Canada to try to, you know, make a new life for his family, make enough money that so he could bring my papa, my grandma, over. He worked everywhere. But one of the common places where Chinese people worked when they came to North America, especially, you know, post-World War II, was in laundromats. You're probably asking why. A, because they were run by Chinese people, but B, because if you worked at a laundromat, and this is what my grandpa said to me, if you work at a laundromat, you don't really have to worry about having a bed because you can sleep on the dirty laundry. Okay. So what about those people? What about my grandpa who worked in a laundromat and then worked for a newspaper as a newspaper boy? What about that? Or what about the struggles? What about the racism that they faced? My grandpa ultimately, you know, he was a really hardworking man. He was a hustler. He ended up owning the newspaper that he started out as a paperboy for. He ended up becoming a restaurateur, kind of like, you know, Sacha Tran, played by Ali Wong in Always Be My Maybe. But they still faced racism. My grandma tells stories about my grandpa. Well, my grandma passed away, rest in peace. But she used to tell stories of my grandpa carrying nunchucks in his back pocket as he walked down the streets with his friends. Or how she used to keep a bowl of salt and pepper behind the cash just in case, you know, anybody got too aggressive with her so she could throw it in their faces, and she was this like little Chinese woman, right? What about those stories? This model minority stereotype assumes that these stories don't exist, that these experiences aren't real. And this is where Always Be My Maybe succeeds. And this is why I liked Always Be My Maybe way more than Crazy Rich Asians. Crazy Rich Asians was amazing. It was funny. It was fantastic. And it was cool to see, you know, sexy and hot Asians, right? Because that's important. But I couldn't relate to those characters. I couldn't relate to their struggles. I couldn't relate to their problems. I couldn't relate to their joy. Because that's not something I understand. That is not my experience. And I'm sure that's the experience of, you know, many people in the world. Because I think like half the world's billionaires are in Asia. But Always Be My Maybe is so much more relatable for, I would assume, most of the Asian listeners of this podcast. Because we get to see two characters who break that model minority stereotype. We get to see Randall Park's character be a slacker. We get to see, you know, Ali Wong's character be successful, but in a field that's not finance. We get to see Keanu Reeves, you know, an actor with Asian heritage, be, you know, this sexy sort of character who everybody wants. Because that's big too, right? Always Be My Maybe is an incredible movie where food and, you know, these amazing characters who really undermine the notion of the model minority take place. This is a story that, you know, we need. This is a story that really sets the tone and direction for future movies featuring Asians in Hollywood. And I say Hollywood because I include like Netflix and all that, because everybody has Netflix, right? So go see Always Be My Maybe because it's just incredible. And if you're already paying for Netflix, you can already watch Always Be My Maybe. Okay, so you can't complain about that. And then go on YouTube and listen to the song I Punched Keanu Reeves by Randall Park / Hello Peril from the movie, because it's one of the funniest credit songs that I've ever seen. And thanks for listening to this, you know, short pilot episode of Representation. If you have any questions about this episode's themes or the topics I discussed, you know, get in touch with me on Twitter and Instagram at Daniel H. Kwan, or via the contact page at danielhkwan.com/contact. You can support the show and my other creative endeavors at patreon.com/DanielHKwan. This is also where I'll be posting the show notes for patrons. And a special shout out goes to my champion patrons. I have, you know, I'm thankful for everybody's support. Every dollar helps and matters. But my champion patrons, Will Jobs, Tony Kraja, POC Gamer, Morgan Gate Levin, Marty Chodrick, Marcelo Lopez, Jonathan Moa, and Dunami Art. Your continued support makes this show possible. I'm Daniel Kwan, and this has been the very first episode of Representation.